Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And now I'll turn today's meeting over to Tom Skinner. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Candy, and thank you all for joining us for the release of CDC's February 2015 Vital Signs Report, this one on disparities in non-smokers' exposure to secondhand smoke, United States 1999 through 2012. With us today is the director of the CDC, Dr. Tom Frieden, who will provide some opening remarks. And then when we get to your questions, he'll be joined by Dr. Brian King from CDC's Office on Smoking and Health. Dr. Frieden.
Good morning or good afternoon, everyone, and thank you very much for joining us. I'm Tom Frieden, CDC Director. CDC works 24/7 to save lives and protect people. One of the ways we do this is by highlighting health threats and what people can do about it. Today, we're releasing a Vital Signs report with an update on secondhand smoke exposure in the U.S., and I'll give you the bottom line up front. Secondhand smoke can kill, and too many Americans, 58 million people, and particularly too many children, 2 out of every 5 children ages 3 to 11 are still exposed to secondhand smoke. Secondhand smoke is dangerous to the health of non-smokers. Today's Vital Signs report highlights data from what's called NHANES, the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, that was collected between 1999 and 2012. NHANES is the gold standard for this type of information. It shows what's really happening in this country. And here's what we found. Even though cigarette smoking has decreased and smoke-free laws have increased, still 1 in 4 non-smokers and 40% of children, 58 million people overall, are being exposed. Secondhand smoke is a Class A carcinogen. It causes cancer in humans. And the Surgeon General has concluded that there is no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke. With the media information that was sent out, we also included a graphic from the Surgeon General's report, which outlines the causes of disease and death that are definitively proven from secondhand smoke. People may not fully appreciate that secondhand smoke isn't merely a nuisance. It causes disease and death, from ear infections and lung infections to sudden infant death syndrome, stroke, heart attack, lung cancer, and reproductive effects in women. These are all proven consequences of exposure to secondhand smoke, and there may well be other disease entities that are caused by exposure that are currently considered possible or probable but not definitively documented. Secondhand smoke is estimated to cause the deaths of 400 babies a year in this country from sudden infant death syndrome, and it's also dangerous to adult non-smokers, killing an estimated 41,000 a year from heart disease and lung cancer. These deaths are completely preventable. Some groups have much higher rates than the population as a whole. This includes 40% of all children between ages 3 and 11, nearly half of all African-American non-smokers, including nearly 70% of black children ages 3 to 11, more than 40% of people who live below the poverty line, and over a third of people who live in rental housing. The home remains the major source of secondhand smoke exposure for children, and children are vulnerable to adverse health effects from this exposure. Comprehensive smoke-free laws that prohibit smoking in all indoor areas of bars, restaurants, and workplaces are an important start. As of today, 26 states and the District of Columbia, plus about 700 communities across the country, have adopted smoke-free laws that cover these three locations. Most recently, New Orleans joined the growing list of U.S. cities that have made all indoor areas of restaurants, bars, private work sites, and casinos smoke-free. It's getting easier to breathe in the Big Easy. We've also seen tremendous increases in the number of college and university campuses that have gone smoke-free. But Still, only about half of the population is protected by comprehensive smoke-free laws. Another important step is smoke-free homes, where there's been significant progress on the part of individual families. Over the past two decades, the percentage of smoke-free households in the U.S. nearly doubled, from 43% to 83%. When smoking occurs in apartments or common areas in a building, the smoke seeps into other units, so even residents who make their own units smoke-free can be exposed. Some communities across the country have made big strides with 100% smoke-free public multi-unit housing in places such as San Antonio, Boston, and Los Angeles, as well as all 20 housing authorities in the state of Maine. The United States Department of Housing and Urban Development has actively encouraged smoke-free policies in public housing, and as a result, several hundred public housing authorities around the country are taking steps to protect their residents by adopting smoke-free policies for multi-unit buildings. In addition, several communities have adopted smoke-free laws covering private, market-rate multi-unit housing, and this has been found to reduce costs, both because of renovation and cleaning and because of improved health outcomes, for example, reduced number of asthma admissions. The Surgeon General found that restricting smoking to certain indoor spaces, using fans or air fresheners, or opening windows will not fully protect non-smokers. The bottom line is that the best way to reduce harms from secondhand smoke is to reduce smoking. If a smoker would like to quit, there are free resources available to help. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit smokefree.gov to get started. We want to reduce secondhand smoke, but of course we also want to reduce firsthand smoke, and we know that more than two-thirds of all smokers want to quit. We can also decrease secondhand smoke exposure by educating individual residents as well as others about the importance of smoke-free multi-unit housing. There's still a lot of work left to be done on tobacco control. This Vital Signs report will help spread the word on the dangers of secondhand smoke and how people can protect themselves and their families. And before we start taking questions, I'd like to ask Brian King to give additional details about today's report.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. Now I'm just going to provide a few more specific details of the findings from today's study. Overall, the prevalence of secondhand smoke exposure in U.S. non-smokers aged 3 years and older declined from 52.5% in 1999 to 2000 down to 25.3% in 2011 to 2012. There are several possible factors that could have contributed to this decline in exposure over time. First, over the past 25 years, almost 700 communities, 26 states, and the District of Columbia have implemented comprehensive smoke-free policies prohibiting smoking in indoor areas of public places and work sites, including restaurants and bars. As of today, almost half of U.S. residents are currently covered by these policies. Second, the proportion of U.S. households have adopted voluntary smoke-free home rules has doubled over the past two decades. More than 8 in 10 U.S. households currently have these smoke-free home rules. Third, social norms regarding the social acceptability of smoking around non-smokers have also changed significantly. And finally, cigarette smoking has declined among both youth and adults. However, despite this progress, 58 million non-smokers in the U.S., including 15 million children between 3 and 11 years of age, are still exposed to secondhand smoke. So today's report confirms that progress has not been uniform across the board and significant disparities remain. During 2011 to 2012, 1 in 3 adolescents aged 12 to 19 were exposed to secondhand smoke, and during the same period, about 2 in 5 children aged 3 to 11 were exposed, compared to adults aged 20 years and older, where it was nearly twice as higher. By race, ethnicity, prevalence was higher among non-Hispanic blacks and Mexican-Americans and non-Hispanic whites, and prevalence was higher among persons living below the poverty level than persons living at or above the poverty level. By housing status, prevalence was higher among persons who rented their housing at 36.8% compared to 19% among those who owned their housing. The findings in this report ultimately underscore the importance of continued efforts to reduce secondhand smoke exposure in all settings to protect non-smokers, particularly children, from this known and preventable health hazard. And this can be accomplished if even more families can make their homes smoke-free and if communities, landlords, and public housing authorities increase availability of smoke-free multi-unit housing.
All right.
Candy, I believe that we're ready for questions, please.
Thank you. At this time, to ask a question, press star 1. Please unmute your line and record your name and affiliation. Again, for all questions or comments, press star 1. If you'd like to withdraw the request at any time, you may press star 2. Thank you. Please stand by for your first question. Thank you again. For any questions or comments, press star 1. Thank you. Currently, we're showing no questions.
All right. Candy, we'll thank you, and we'll have Dr. Frieden conclude our call by reiterating some bottom-line messages, and should you have further questions, you can call the CDC press office at 404-639-3286. So, Dr. Frieden, can you conclude our call, please?
Thanks very much. Appreciate people joining and the interest in this issue. Tobacco remains the leading preventable cause of death in this country, and secondhand smoke continues to expose too many people, 58 million people, to secondhand smoke. That includes 40% of children ages 3 to 11 and 1 in 3 adolescents. These are preventable health harms, and going smoke-free can reduce the incidence of a wide range of health problems and also in multi-unit housing reduce cleaning and renovation costs. The harms caused by secondhand smoke are completely preventable, and we've made progress, but we have more progress to make. Thank you all very much for joining us.
Okay, thank you, Candy. And once again, this concludes our call. Reporters can call the press office at 404-639-3286 if they have additional. Thank you.
Thank you for your participation. That concludes today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.